Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices. I'm Joanna Hernandez. Here's what we're looking at. The Department of Justice is suing Chicago and Illinois in an effort to invalidate local laws that protect undocumented immigrants. President Trump pauses his plan for hiking tariffs on goods from Mexico. A look at the potential impact if he follows through. And the possible effect mass deportations could have on Illinois agriculture and food prices. And now to some of today's top stories. The Congressional Progressive Caucus is calling for the firing of Elon Musk. During a news conference today, members of the caucus criticized the billionaire's motives for leading the so-called Department of Government Efficiency. They claim he has infiltrated multiple federal agencies, including the Department of Labor and the Treasury Department, in order to implement cuts to spending and workers. Illinois Congressman Chuy Garcia referred to Musk's agenda as an illegal power grab.
We are here to tell working families that we will not allow Musk to have access to your Social Security numbers to push out civil service workers or to launch an all-out assault against government agencies. These moves are illegal, and we're working with civil rights groups who are suing DOGE for these actions.
And a judge is temporarily blocking President Trump's plan, offering federal workers financial incentives to resign. It comes as roughly 2 million federal employees, including around 42,000 in Illinois, had been given a midnight deadline to decide. The deferred resignation offer would allow them to leave their jobs and be paid through September. The offer is an effort by the Trump administration to shrink the size of the federal workforce and warns layoffs or furloughs could come next. But Wednesday, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker issued a statement warning federal workers to proceed with caution on the offer. A new push to reform Chicagoland public transit without merging CTA, Metra, and PACE. State lawmakers filed a bill today backed by a group of labor unions. The measure calls for big changes in transit oversight, more coordination, and a new funding formula. The bill doesn't go as far as other proposals to merge CTA, Metra, and PACE into a new agency, and it doesn't have any specific sources of new transit funding yet. The proposal aims to tackle a $750 million budget gap expected next year when COVID relief funding ends. It's almost been a year since Dexter Reed was fatally shot by four Chicago police officers during a traffic stop. The lawsuit filed by Reed's mother now has a proposed settlement that includes a $1.25 million payment to his family and a ban on city police officers setting traffic stop quotas. CPD denies setting those quotas or using traffic stop numbers to determine promotions and bonuses. The agreement will be renewed by the City Council's Finance Committee on Monday. And the Civilian Office of Police Accountability continues to investigate the shooting, questioning the legitimacy of the initial stop. Supporters of gender-affirming care are calling on UI Health to clarify its commitment to providing such care for minors. It comes after advocates say UI Health canceled an Illinois teen's chest surgery a day after President Trump signed an executive order seeking to end gender-affirming care for minors.
I know there are many of you in this crowd that feel that exact same way, who would not be standing here today if they did not have access to the same care that I did. UI Healthcare is for some the only healthcare they can have at the moment, the only healthcare that is affordable to them.
UI Health did not respond to specific inquiries about the gender-affirming surgery cancellation cited by advocates, but says it is committed to providing inclusive care to our community. We will continue to provide gender-affirming care to transgender patients in accordance with the law. Now, Virginia McCaskey, the longtime matriarchy of the Chicago Bears, has died. McCaskey became owner of the Bears when her father, NFL co-founder George Halas, died in 1983, becoming one of the few women in sports to hold the position. Her late husband, Ed McCaskey, succeeded Halas as chairman for the Bears. Together, they had 11 children. Over her lifespan, McCaskey was around for 8 out of the team's 9 championships, including the team's only Super Bowl, but made it clear she always wanted more. Virginia McCaskey was 102 years old. We're sending our condolences to her family. Up next, we break down the Justice Department's new lawsuit against Illinois. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices. is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
President Donald Trump is escalating his push to punish the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois for working to protect undocumented immigrants. His administration today is asking a federal judge to overturn the city's Welcoming City Ordinance and the state's Trust Act. The lawsuit filed by the Department of Justice makes it clear the president will directly target Chicago as it seeks to carry out the largest mass deportation in American history. Our Heather Sharon joins us now with more. Heather, this seems like a big battle. Now, the lawsuit argues the city and the state's entry laws are unconstitutional. Why?
Well, the lawsuit argues that the laws make it impossible for federal agents to enforce federal law. And, of course, under the Constitution, federal law trumps state law and city law, and that's why they're saying it should be overturned. Now, the city says that is, in fact, not the case, that there is nothing in the city law or the state law that would prevent federal immigration agents from apprehending and deporting people here without authorization. They simply say it's not the state or the city's role to help that effort.
Now, remind us what the city and state laws actually do and why Governor J.B. Pritzker and Mayor Brennan Johnson are defending them.
Well, as we've talked about, they've been on the books since the mid-1980s here in Chicago, and it's designed to make sure that Chicagoans, regardless of their citizenship status or their immigration status, can access services that they need, like police protection, health care, shelter, and all sorts of other services the city provides to all residents. Now, the governor and the mayor say that that will make Chicago a safer place. That puts them at loggerheads with President Trump, who says that all undocumented immigrants are criminals because they came here without authorization or overstayed their permission. The governor and the mayor, of course, reject that characterization.
And how did the mayor and the governor react to the lawsuit?
So both said that they looked forward to defending the laws in court. Governor J.B. Pritzker was a bit more direct than the mayor. He said he looked forward to the state's day in court, while the mayor said that he would continue to defend Chicago's longstanding values and protect working people.
Yeah, he's been very outspoken about that. Why did the Trump administration sue Chicago instead of another sanctuary city like Denver?
Well, Chicago has long been in President Trump's crosshairs. He sees Chicago as the epicenter of all urban ills and has repeatedly attacked the city's leaders and incompetent. I also think it has something to do with what we saw a few weeks ago. Of course, we saw all of that reporting saying that the mass deportation would start here in Chicago. That didn't happen because of leaks. And then when ICE agents arrived in the city, they found, as the Border Star said, a very educated population prepared to respond to protect as many people in Chicago as possible. That clearly has thrown a wrench in the Trump administration's efforts.
And what happens next?
Well, litigation, as we all know, is a lengthy process, especially when you have three layers of government, four including Cook County. So this is going to take a long time to play out. Back in 2017, the city sued the Trump administration over a similar effort to strip federal funding from sanctuary cities. That wasn't resolved until 2020, when it went all the way up to the Supreme Court, where the city won a total victory.
Well, thank you, Heather, for this report. We'll have to see what happens next.
Thanks, Joanna.
And for more on this story, you can visit our website. While you're there, you can learn more about how Chicago became a sanctuary city. Fears are heightening over the potential of a new trade war and its possible impact across the country. President Trump has agreed to a temporary pause on the 25% tariffs he's proposing on goods from Mexico and Canada, the country's two largest trading partners. The administration is promising to impose tariffs if the countries do not address Trump's concerns over border security and drug trafficking. Here to talk more about what it could mean locally are Juan Gonzalez, senior research fellow at Great Cities Institute at the University of Illinois Chicago, and on Zoom, Reina Torres Medevil, consul general of Mexico in Chicago. Thank you both for joining us. Reina, I want to start with you. Now, if these tariffs are implemented, what impact will that have on the relationship between Mexico and the U.S.?
Oh, certainly it will have a major impact. Just think about this. Mexico, the U.S., and Canada together have one of the most important free trade agreements in the world. Just the trade between Mexico and the U.S. Amounts for $8 billion annually. Can you imagine that? And our border is 2,000 miles long. And, you know, it is witness of all these wonderful exchanges in for the economy. It at the end of the day, if some measure like this passes or moves ahead, it's going to be impacting the supply chain between the two countries, but also the pockets of the millions of consumers in this country and, of course, in Mexico.
And Juan, let's continue to break down those impacts. You know, what could this impact have on the labor workforce?
Well, for instance, the Brookings Institution just came out recently with a report that says that if they're implemented, at least 177,000 jobs in the U.S. will be lost, possibly up to 400,000 if Mexico and Canada retaliate with their own tariffs. For Canada, it could mean as much as 500,000 jobs lost, and for Mexico, over 2 million jobs lost. And if that many people from Mexico lose their jobs, where do you think many of them will gonna end up going to? They're going to end up coming to the United States. So Mexico has actually been improving economically. More Mexicans have been staying in Mexico as a result of the social changes. This could have the drastic effect of countering all that and forcing more Mexicans to migrate to the United States.
You know, that's an interesting perspective that we haven't been hearing. And locally, how could tariffs affect people's wallets here?
Well, for Canada, the state of Illinois is the number one consumer of oil and gas from Canada. $47 billion in oil and gas imports. If their tariffs are slapped, that's going to mean a sharp increase in what people in Illinois pay for their gas. In Mexico, the biggest importation from Mexico in Illinois is beer and alcohol and beverages, about over $5 billion a year. So slapping a tariff on that is going to mean that people here are going to pay more for their alcohol, for their beer, and for their other beverages. And, of course, that's going to unduly affect the poorest sectors of the Illinois community.
Would you say for fresh produce as well? Because we know that avocados.
Right. Fresh produce, of course, avocados especially. But the largest segment of importation of Illinois of Mexican goods is of beverages.
Reyna, I want to bring you in. Mexico said it will respond with tariffs of its own without detailing what specific products. Can you give us an idea of what products could be affected?
I think that what we need to stress right now is that the agreement that was reached recently between the two governments, and that currently, if both governments were able to set this pause in this measure that was about to come in force, is a very positive development. What is important right now is that the two countries are talking on how to move ahead. And as the president of Mexico, Claudia Sheinbaum, said, let's make this pause permanent. Because all that is at stake is what Juan just mentioned. You know, just to give you an example, I'm pretty sure that if you had strawberries for breakfast this morning or some sort of berry, that's coming from Mexico. You know, besides the avocados on the beer and all those things, the agricultural sector in Illinois, of course, sells a lot to Mexico, soybean and other crops. So I think it's very important that we keep that in mind and that we make sure that this pause is permanent.
And Reyna, you talked about the two countries being a positive that they're speaking, you know, and mentioning that. What do you think discussions should be focused on in those conversations?
I actually know because the president of Mexico announced it, and it's been in the news that we have specific groups to discuss, of course, trade, that is very important, but also what's going on in our border. We want to make sure that our border is secure for both countries. Actually, nobody favors drug trafficking, and that's also something that was put on the table by President Trump. But also, it's very important that we discuss what's happening with, for example, the illegal trade of fire guns into Mexico and some other things that were of concern for the Mexican people. So we're really happy that all those issues are on the table, that we are thinking in a very calm way to move ahead and to try to figure out how to make this pause permanent.
You know, Juan, what are your thoughts? You know, what do you think both countries should prioritize?
Well, I think the whole issue of drugs that that President Trump has raised is really a red herring. The United States has had an addiction to illicit drugs for over a century. You start with the 1890s cracking down on opium, the opium trade, in the 1960s on marijuana and LSD, in the 1970s on heroin, in the 1980s and 90s on cocaine and crack, then on amphetamines, and now we're dealing with fentanyl. So clearly, the United States has an addiction problem. There are many people in this country who have mental problems and depression and anxiety, and they treat it with drugs. Rather than blame someone from the outside, why don't we start looking at the mental health needs of our own people and trying to figure out what our society is doing wrong that causes so many people to be drug addicted? It has nothing to do with trade. It has nothing to do with other countries. It has to do with the internal problems of our own country.
And, you know, Trump's response, I want to bring Canada into it. Trump's response to Canada's trade surplus was, we don't need anything they have. We have unlimited energy. We should make our own cars, have our own lumber than we could ever use. How sustainable is it for America to rely solely on domestic manufacturing and sales of products typically sourced from other countries, would you say?
Well, the reality is that much of the manufacturing that occurs in Mexico and China, even in Canada, is American companies. General Motors last year produced 887,000 cars in Mexico. Ford, over 300,000. Stellantis, over 400,000. These American companies go to these other countries because they want to pay less in labor costs. So it's really American companies that are benefiting from these situations, rather than claim that it's the Mexicans that are eating our lunch or the Chinese that are destroying the United States. Look at what your own companies, our companies, are doing in these countries.
And then a last question. How are financial markets, businesses, and consumers trying to prepare for the possibility of new tariffs, you would say?
Well, there is a very strong team in Mexico working on this. And, of course, they have prepared, as it was labeled, Plan B and Plan C if necessary, just waiting for what kind of decisions were going to be taken in the U.S. government. But at the end of the day, I cannot stress enough the importance that there is an open dialogue, that there are open negotiations, and that we need to keep in mind all that is at stake when we talk about trade and we talk about the bilateral relationship. We share a very long border, so there is no other way than cooperation and to make sure that this partnership moves ahead. And as the president says, cooperation, never subordination.
Well, thank you both for your input. I appreciate it.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Up next, how the farming industry is holding up amidst mass deportations. Stay with us. The Trump administration's push for mass deportations has major cities like Chicago on high alert. But some residents in rural areas are also expressing concerns, specifically farmers who are worried about losing their workforce. The U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates that 42% of farm workers are undocumented immigrants. Joining us now with more on the potential impact are Rebecca Shih, Chief Executive Officer at the American Business Immigration Coalition. And joining us via Zoom is Stephen Dorloff, a professor in educational policy at the University of Chicago and the director of Stone Center for Research on Wealth Inequality and Mobility. Thank you both for joining us. Rebecca, I want to start with you. How important is the immigrant workforce to the farming industry?
Thank you so much for having me. Immigrants are critical to the farming industry. Agriculture is a $3 trillion industry, and 72% of the ag workforce are immigrants.
You know, what do you say to those people who have, you know, many different opinions on what's going on with immigration and who should be, you know, who is illegal and who's not, especially when it comes to, you know, such big workforce like farming.
Right. Well, we appreciate having eggs on our shelves. I mean, I'm having a hard time finding eggs right now, and I'm sure a lot of viewers are as well. We appreciate having avocados and milk. And if you were to just remove a significant part of our farm workforce, we're going to start seeing $20 lettuces, $16 cartons of eggs, or no milk, because nearly all of the dairy farmers and farm workers here in our nation, including in Illinois and the Midwest, are immigrants.
And Stephen, going to you, what are the sociological and economic consequences at play here? How do you break it down to someone who's trying to understand?
Well, starting with the economy, as has already been pointed out, removing 40% of the farm workers of the United States will inevitably cause substantial increases in food prices. Nonpartisan organizations that have studied the effects have argued, I think credibly, that there'll be something on the order of a 10% increase in overall food prices. This is just basic supply and demand. In other words, there's really no controversy among economists that that's the consequence that one's going to face. Now, the sociological effects are more complicated to measure, but nevertheless, they're profound. You're thinking, you know, the discussion of deportation is to remove a million people from the agricultural sector out of the 2.2 million that work there. And each one of those people has a family. Each one of those individuals has friendships. They're part of the communities. And so one can talk about the effects in isolation on the food supply, but the devastation of the communities because of the destruction of all of those social relationships that constitute communities is a profound loss.
Rebecca, you did mention this, but according to the USDA, nearly half of the crop workers and dairy farmers in the U.S. lack legal immigration status. Why would mass deportations be detrimental to the agriculture workforce?
So currently, we have over 400,000 open jobs in agriculture, our food processors alone. And so if you were to remove a significant portion of people that are already working, they're milking our cows at 3 a.m. in the morning, and cows need to milk three times a day, 365 days a week. And if you were to remove people from this workforce, we're going to see products that we love disappear from the shelves. We're going to see that we become a net importer of food, and food security is a national security problem. And so this won't just impact the immigrants and the communities, which are extremely important, but it's going to impact the pocketbooks of everyday Americans.
Do you find yourself having these conversations with people as of lately?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's becoming clearer to people, because this isn't just a philosophical discussion anymore. And we're starting to see workplace rates in North Florida, for example, on strawberry farms, citrus farms. We're seeing restaurants in Texas, for example, getting raided by ICE. So I think people are going to start really feeling the impact.
And Stephen, with the domestic agriculture sector already struggling with labor shortages, how would, again, deportations affect our economy?
Well, I think that the effects are clearly going to be negative. The micro example, the specific one that you brought up, is agriculture, where you're losing a million workers. And remember, these are workers that have skills. And it's not a matter that those skills are certainly going to replicate themselves in whoever might replace them. That's clearly cause a contraction there. But more generally, it is a myth to say that illegal or undocumented immigrants are somehow reducing the living standards of people that are citizens. And the reason for that is undocumented people are not only, they're producers, and they're also consumers. And so you think about the economies in which individuals are buying things, they're producing things, there are net gains for populations as a whole. Studies of the effects of change of efforts to reduce the number of undocumented people in communities have systematically shown that, if anything, it harms the people that are left behind. There's lower demand, there's lower production, and it's simply a thinner economy and a thinner society.
Stephen, you know, talking personally from your experience, are there any frustrations when you are having these conversations with people? You know, similar question that I asked Rebecca about, you know, who is illegal or not, or who should be deported or not?
Well, I wouldn't say frustrations, but on this specifically, but it's an example where simply bad economics and bad social science are articulated by, you know, people in the policy community, our leaders, and therefore, you know, perpetuate myths about the effects of having undocumented people in the United States. None of that is to say that there are not serious conversations to be had about the appropriate levels of for a society of legal immigration and how to think about what to do when you have 11 million people in the country. But to claim that somehow is harming the economy in the aggregate, I think is simply false.
Well, thank you. We'll have to end it at that. But thank you both for your input.
And that's our show for this Thursday night. You can stream Chicago Tonight at WTTW or YouTube channel every evening and catch up on any program you missed. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7 for the weekend review. Now, from all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez. Thank you for watching. Stay safe and healthy. Buenas noches.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports free educational initiatives in the legal profession.